yeah, we have a whole lot of stuff to go over. With the previous episode, I kind of wanted to take a break, experiment a little bit, do something different, kind of show you guys how we're expanding, growing. People don't understand how every single week, every single day, there is a whole different chance to do things different. Now, with that being said, now what that was, if you guys couldn't hear it, was the Pure Heart Alchemy mist, their communication, their oracle communication mist. This was something sent to us by the good folks over there at Pure Heart Alchemy right after the show, believe it or not. And it was actually organized by our friend, Neil Pasco, or as you know, Nate Max of Nate Max TV. We've had him on the show, and you guys can go check it out. The mist itself is basically designed to foster co-creativity. This is a word that I've learned from Nate that I actually do really like, and expect to see a lot more work with those people. And the reason why I wanted to start off the show with that is so that you understand where we're coming from. See the growth. See what we've really become. You know, we have a lot of new listeners that tune in all the time, and all I can really say is I'm sorry I don't necessarily backtrack as much to kind of update, but, you know, I'm very proud of where we're coming or where we're going and where we've come from. And with that being said, we kind of have to jump into this episode kind of raw. And the reason why is because we have to look at what's happening to people. What is happening to the mindset? Now, whenever I'm talking about working with different organizations, different networks, different brands, different businesses, and different things like that, what we're trying to do is create our own economy, create our own market, create our own lifestyle, create our own culture, create our own community. That's the whole point. That's literally why I tell you guys I'm here, is to act as a platform for us to have discussions about these greater issues. Now, we're fully aware of the things that are taking place. I think, I would like to think that we are. Now our mindset needs to be solution-oriented. We have to start coming up with solutions to these problems. We are very well aware of how in-depth these things are. And hopefully, over the next couple months and over the next couple years, we can start gearing our minds towards talking about ways to combat not only the vaccines, the GMOs. We're already seeing the vegan movement take place, people changing up their diet, things like lab-grown meat. I'm sure we'll get into that as well. And so much more. Like, there's a whole lot going on. And the point is to identify that we are in a period of change. This is the paradigm shift. This is what happens whenever we find ourselves on the opposite end. Well, not necessarily in the opposite end, but literally within this transitional period. And this is going to cause a whole lot of controversy, I'm sure, as it already has. But I wanted to start off this episode by ripping off the Band-Aid. We have to talk about this drag queen story time stuff. This is something that I see plaguing it's schools, libraries. It's pervading our education system. I'm not going to lie. Now, I don't talk about this type of stuff because I understand these are people's beliefs and lifestyle. As we are trying to create our own culture and lifestyle of consciousness and awareness, culture of co-creativity and compassion, you have people over here who are trying to force down these beliefs upon others, impress these types of ideologies on others. I'm not trying to say anything out there like that. All I'm saying is if you want to come discuss some things, you know where to find us. You know what we'll be doing. Find our track record, you see. But what we're having now is this form of modern indoctrination. It's not education. It's to where we're seeing the state take over and for people, because we have new listeners all the time, for people who are tuning in, I've talked about this, how what we're seeing with education is what I consider legal lunacy. It's not teaching you about taxes, you know, even though it's theft. It's not teaching you about how to make a business. It's not teaching you about proper sciences. It's not teaching you about certain different things. What higher learning and higher education has become is basically spouting off talking points. The same way that pharmaceutical companies pay for their own studies and say that they don't, you know, find anything wrong is the same thing that we're finding with education. But I digress. I'm going to play for you guys this clip where we actually have a drag queen literally reading to kids. Now, I'm not sure if we'll play the full clip, but the reason why I wanted to point this out is because it plays in to this kid called Desmond, the drag kid, as well as TEDx endorsing pedophilia. And recently, the pedophiles, that's right, Pedogate pedophiles, are now wanting to be absorbed into the LGBTQ 546 plus community, you see. So there's a lot of different things going on. And if you ask me, again, there are so many different things going on with that. Look at what's happening with the church, you see. Look at where all of these people are going. What is it? This is that fake compassion. But let's play for you guys this clip where we have a drag queen story time.
Getting ready for work. A meticulous process that involves shaving, glitter, hairspray, and a wig. But instead of performing in a nightclub,
hi, hello, and
the venue is the Brooklyn Public Library in Park Slope at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Who wants to be a drag queen when they grow up?
Little Miss Hot Mess.
Who is ready for a story?
Is the host of Drag Queen Story Hour.
This one is called Worm Loves Worm.
Talking, singing, and reading.
We can both be grooms.
To an audience of preschoolers, toddlers, and their caregivers.
The hips on the drag queen go swish, 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 swish.
The library started scheduling Drag Queen Story Hour last year.
I'm a girl.
And is already looking to expand to other locations.
Okay. Drag Queen Story Hour is fantastic because it addresses all of these issues of gender fluidity and self-acceptance and all of these topics that
And so is the backlash. Many negative comments have been posted online about the program. Okay. The AP has agreed.
Okay, I'm going to cut it off right there. But basically, gender fluidity. This is something that I understand is an epidemic. Apparently, you know, now they have children deciding what gender they want to be. You know, you have boys wearing dresses, girls wearing jeans. I mean, tomboys. That's always been a thing, and that's kind of how this all works. Is they roll it out with the females first. And then, you know, it gradually goes into the male population. And so here, you know, so here and so forth. The point I'm trying to make by playing this, you know, like the drag queen said, both being grooms, worms loving worms, this is them trying to distort reality. This is them trying to invert reality. Now, before I played this clip, I was telling you guys how I think that they're collapsing the church and then absorbing these people into the LGBTQ plus community. Why is this? Because now we have the LGBTQ basically preaching nothing but acceptance. And if you don't join the rainbow, and I know this kind of sounds wild, you're basically a bigot. You're basically, you know, a homophobe. Now, a few years ago, whenever I was just getting into this, I had joked casually about how I'm going to, as a black male, a straight black male, I'm going to have straight rights, black rights, and male rights, right? What is going on? They are literally teaching a psychosis. They are basically saying, this is okay. It's okay to play dress up. It's okay to not believe in who you are. But then at the same time, they want us to believe in not who they are. If they don't accept themselves, how can we accept them? This creates this paradox where we're believing in whatever is trendy. Now, this is only one example of what I'm trying to talk about. You see, let me play for you this quick clip, if I have it ready. It's of Desmond, the drag kid.
Well, in the year 2007, gay pride means self-expression to me. Hi, I'm Desmond the Amazing. I'm 10 years old, and I'm a drag kid, and I live in New York City, and I'm an LGBTQ activist and advocate. I discovered that I wanted to drag when I watched the first episode of RuPaul's Drag Race when I was 2. Then I moved on to, like, little dresses. Then I moved on to making outfits. I got my inspirations from designers like Alexander McQueen, Betsy Johnson, Conde Garçon, Jean-Paul Gaultier, the Club Kids, their fashion and the makeup, not the bad things, the Blitz Kids of London. And if you wanted to drag, just start off with a little wig and some lip gloss and a little, like, t-shirt and a little skirt and some heels or sneakers, whatever. You can be a drag queen no matter what. I've always been able to be myself because of my supporting mom and dad. Say hi, Mom.
Hi.
That's my mom, and I love her to death. Drag is a form of expression and being yourself and it, dressing however you want and looking fierce no matter what you're wearing. Even if your eyeliner went down and it's like so bad, you still look fierce. My motto is be yourself always, but I like to add this on. No matter what anyone says, and paid haters know mine because they're not as fierce as you.
Okay. Well, I suppose I'm just a hater. I don't want to teach my kids this stuff. I don't think that we should be teaching kids this stuff. You really have to think about how much of a slippery slope this really is. We're basically saying that drag, you can do drag no matter what. You can change your gender no matter what. You don't have to be who you were. And I totally understand this, but where do you think it ends? Where does this end? You see. Yep, you have people who are uncomfortable with themselves who decide to dress up and then go to read to children. Is this Halloween? I'm not trying to, you know, make this so much as a joke to really say that a lot of these different types of things are cries for help. We've had people on the show who've talked about this, the sexual abuse, the disturbing dissociative identity disorder, the psychosis. You know, you have to understand how all of this works because pedophiles cannot procreate. They have to recruit. You see, how much tolerance, and that's all this is, that's what this is about, right? How tolerant you really are. You know, there's that word again. There's political correctness literally molding the minds of future generations right there in front of you. I'm sorry I'm not woke enough to understand this, but you have to understand there's also the chemical assault, things like atrazine. Bisphenol A, we've talked about it, these gender-bending chemicals that are in the food, that's in the water. And then you have the culture that endorses it. You have the family, as Desmond had right there, his support. Say, oh, hi, Mom. Thank you. And now you have TEDx endorsing pedophilia as well. We're not going to play this full clip for you guys, but this is also important because it's this mindset that with intellectualism comes the dissolvement of individualism. It's crazy. Let's take a listen.
Under the sexual disorders, whether the persistent occurrence of sexual thoughts and feelings for pre-adolescent children have been acted upon or not is not relevant to the diagnosis. Like every other sexual orientation, pedophilia can have different characteristics. For example, it can be heterosexual, it can be homosexual, bisexual. Some pedophiles are exclusively attracted to children. Others are not exclusively attracted to children, but they're also sexually interested in adults. But their main sexual interest lies within children. Only if this main sexual interest is given, we talk about pedophilia. The vast majority of all pedophiles are men, about 99%. Within the male population, 1-2% are considered to be pedophiles. This translates to about 60 million people worldwide. This is as much as the population of Italy or of South Africa. Therefore, pedophilia is not an irrelevant phenomenon we can't simply ignore. Chances every one of you knows at least one pedophile are higher than that you don't know anyone. We haven't found out yet why pedophilia occurs. There are biological, social, and psychological factors to it. It occurs unrelated to social economical status and unrelated to educational level. So generally speaking, anyone could be born a pedophile. It is crucial to understand the difference between pedophilia and child sexual abuse, which is illegal and must always be. Pedophilia is only the sexual preference for pre-adolescent children. The difference between child sexual abuse and pedophilia becomes very obvious when we look at scientific studies.
Oh, really?
Think about it for yourself.
No, I'm thinking about it.
What do you think?
I think it's messed up.
What percentage of child molesters are pedophiles?
All of them.
Have a guess.
Okay, look.
Is it...
I need to put this lady away.
20%? 40? 60?
We need to get this lady
out. Maybe even 80%?
Oh, God. So all of them? So I'm going to go ahead and get this lady out of here. What I'm trying to talk about with you guys and showing you this type of information is how pedophiles believe that they should be a part of the LGBTQ community. They think that they should be addressed as minor attracted persons. What we're basically seeing is this is, again, indoctrination. Why? Because you have pedophiles that literally run the world. You have child molesters, sex offenders who are literally running the world. Why do we have a pedogate timeline? Why is this type of stuff occurring? There's so many deep occult things that we've gone into as to why these people do what they do. Like she said, we have to look at the difference between pedophilia and child sex abuse. There's 80%. There is no difference, if you ask me. That is nothing but child sexual abuse. There should be no reason as to why people, males, 60 million people, Italy or South Africa, isn't that what she said? That's the population, right? Are pedophiles. And I know it sounds wild, but let's get into this article right here. I put this up July 10th. It's from Sound of the Times. It says pedophiles are rebranding themselves as MAPs, or minor attracted persons, in an effort to gain acceptance and be included into the LGBT community. According to the Urban Dictionary, the blanket term MAP includes infantiles, infants, pedophiles, prepubescent children, hebephiles, pubescent children, and ephebophiles, postpubescent children. Some MAPs also refer to themselves as no-MAPs, or non-offending minor attracted persons. These pedophiles seek to be part of the LGBT plus community, even going so far as to make a pride flag for Gay Pride Month. Where do we think this was going to go? Where do we think this is really going to end? This is acceptance, right? This is tolerance. If you don't accept this, you're a bigot. You see, if you don't accept people dressing up as females, or males dressing up as females and females dressing up as men, reading to your children, having hipster glasses or wigs or some kind of thing because they don't feel comfortable with themselves and you don't feel comfortable with them feeling comfortable with themselves, you're the problem. You see, let's get back into this article. It says that the MAP/no MAP community tries to pull at people's heartstrings by claiming that pedophilia or pedophiles are misunderstood, marginalized people, and that as long as their attraction to children is not acted upon, or in some cases when they get permission from the children, that they should not be villainized. Sites such as the Prevention Project claim to be aimed at helping children, posting quotes like the one below, reminiscent of testimonials of struggling gay youth under headlines like, "Everyone needs support. John was suicidal. He had been bullied by trolls on social media for most of his life for being different." The bullies were primarily people who claimed, based on their religious beliefs, that John was going to hell and deserved to die. They described how they would kill him on his Twitter page, and people supported their hate. Desperate for help, John sought treatment for his shame, depression, and suicidal tendencies. Although he was scared to share about himself with a stranger, he felt desperate for help, as he had no desire to harm anyone, ever. Once he shared about his attraction to children, his therapist told him, "I don't treat sex offenders." Many blogs exist on Tumblr showing support for MAPs, claiming that they should be a part of the LGBT community, and attempting to create safe spaces for these minor attracted persons. Now, why is this a huge issue? Why am I trying to talk about this? Because this is, again, indoctrination. This is only one form of it. You see, they want you to, again, pull at your heartstrings, make you feel bad, right? Make you think that these types of things aren't happening. You literally have pedophiles that are trying to be accepted when we're learning that so many are out there involved in organized trafficking rings. We have them literally doing internet grooming. You have 30-year-olds that are talking to 11. It gets ridiculous. It gets ridiculous. I'm not even going to go into it. The point I'm trying to make with starting off the episode is we have to rip this off. Okay, we have to stop this. We have to stop caving in to political correctness, to this kind of indoctrination, because one of the main purveyors of this kind of mindset, of this type of faux compassion, is Pope Francis, Franken Pope. Mm-hmm, that's right. Everybody should be acceptance. And again, this is that fake love that the rainbow is offering. It's not discerning love. It's not actual love. Some of these people actually need help. We're not looking at how some of the people that are being raised, or some of the children that are being raised these days, are being given, you know, pharmaceuticals. They're being given opioids. They're deficient in some cases. You know, look at what is going on, not only with education. It becomes a whole discussion of, you know, nature versus nurture. But we can see this whole push occurring. You know, family separations, where the state and where government and where mainstream media are the arbiters of truth, where we have to listen to them. You see, we have to understand that this is a very, very slippery slope that we're going down. When we come back, because we're going to take a quick break, we're going to talk about more of this authoritative state. This is something I kind of wanted to get into in this section, but the idea that they are doing DNA testing at the border, as well as designer babies being given the green light. So many different things are occurring at the same time, but we'll get into this and more on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We'll talk to you soon. Welcome back. That's right. We're still here, doing what it does, trying to catch a buzz, and making sure the work gets done. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. I'm your charismatic and lovable host, Freedom Faction. So like I said, we have a lot of crazy stuff going on. One of the things that I think is kind of crazy, even though I kind of spent the whole first half of the show talking about these pedophiles, and the danger that they're going to cause. I recently saw how apparently there are posters being put up in a town where they're calling basically for people to report illegal aliens. Now, hear me out. When you have people saying, let's report pedophiles, I'm not saying let's report pedophiles. I'm just saying let's treat these people. You know, they have genuine problems, I believe, that require help. People that actually need therapy and need to seek counsel. But when you have people reporting pedophiles, illegal aliens, ICE agents, people for their political beliefs, it is so crazy. But this is where we're at in 2018. Just the other year, I think towards the start of Trump's presidency, I talked about how it would be strange that you would receive a pizza. So, you know, this is just a hypothetical situation. You would receive a pizza, and because of something that you posted on social media, they would geolocate you, and that pizza would have some kind of bomb. And we've seen these types of things happen before, and more of this type of chaos is going to unfold. But recently, as I said, in a Nebraska city, we hear how a sign is urging citizens to report illegal aliens. This is also in, again, it just sets a very, very dangerous precedence. Let's take a listen.
It was hanging right here.
This sign was the last thing Rose Cano expected to see, stapled to a power pole.
And I kept looking, and I'm like, oh, there's more signs.
A total of four.
And you're surprised by that?
Yeah, I'm like, why?
She says they don't belong in Dundee or anywhere.
It's harassment. It's room for people to start, you know, racial profiling.
The signs tell Americans to take action.
It is your civic duty to report any and all illegal aliens.
A short drive from Dundee, more signs. These posted near 50th and Center. We checked with neighbors. Nobody knows who posted them. Omaha's Immigrant Legal Center says they're a problem.
Is the fact that somebody's speaking another language proof that somebody's a U.S. citizen? Absolutely not. And that's the kind of risk that you run when you start taking this type of matters into your own hands and you don't have the training and knowledge.
We don't mind. It was hanging right here.
This sign was the last thing Rose Cano.
All right, and basically what we're beginning to talk about, I don't want to say it's racism, but, you know, what other way would you be able to look at this? What we're talking about is how we're singling out a specific class of people, a certain way of saying, look, and this is already happening, this is Trump's America, but if we begin to, you know, report pedophiles, report illegals, report these agents, we don't see how that's going to open up the door for so much more. We don't see how that's going to create a surveillance state out of so many different things. Now, I'm trying to maintain people's freedom, individuality, and liberties at all cost. But whenever we're doing this, literally saying, I don't like that person because of this, or get out, basically racism, you know, get out of my country, you know, I don't like you. We're forgetting the idea. The whole idea, the whole principle behind America was so that everybody could come over here with the pursuit of happiness and try to get it. But if we're over here singling these people out, you know, why would they want to come here? And I understand there's a legal and lawful process, but this type of behavior is going to turn more people away than it's actually going to. It's going to do more harm than good. It really is bad, which leads me to my next point. You have the UK and the US authorities that are now doing DNA testing on migrant children at the border. What this is, again, this opens up that surveillance state to where these children will be surveilled their entire life. Both the UK and the US are now using DNA testing on migrant children who have entered the country illegally, according to CNN and The Independent. One of the reasons that we've heard this need, air quotes, to happen is because human trafficking is very, very real. You have people, coyotes, human traffickers, people who bring other people across the border, or fly them in, or put them in the back of trucks, in the back of rigs, whatever, and then they traffic them there. It's very easy to come into a country and say, this is my child, whenever you have no kind of actual proper documentation. Again, where are the girls? Where are the females? Where are the children? What is happening? Now, again, what this basically does is this makes us usher in the police state, the martial law, the surveillance state. I'm going to get into this article. It's from the Daily Sheeple. I put it up July 6th. They reposted it from Zero Hedge. It says both the U.S. and the U.K. are now using DNA testing on migrant children who have entered the country illegally. The Department of Health and Human Services said Thursday that the agency would be using DNA testing as a faster and a more reliable method of reuniting parents or reuniting separating migrant children with their parents, reports CNN. Quote, the safety and security is paramount and that it is not uncommon for children to be trafficked or smuggled by those claiming to be the parents. To our knowledge, this is a cheek swab. This is a cheek swab and is being done to expedite parental verification and ensuring reunification with verified parents due to child welfare concerns, a federal official told the network, who would not say how long the DNA sampling had taken place, whether DNA requires consent, or whether the samples are being stored in a database. That's my problem right there. Where is it being stored? What does this type of stuff mean? Why is it happening? You see, this is the type of stuff. I genuinely care about what happens to the next generation. And when they see us doing all of this, when they see us kind of freaking out and not necessarily treating one another with respect, they pick up on these types of things. They're learning from us. They're learning from our mistakes. They're seeing us they're seeing all this go down right now. So whenever we have these children coming into this country, kind of being processed, this is what they already expect. I talked about this whenever Melania went to the detainment facility. Just getting these kids indoctrinated, cultured, used to, or conditioned to this type of behavior. This is already what's happening in schools, where they're giving them bulletproof backpacks, where they're giving, in Florida, in some cases, school resource officers, assault rifles. Schools already have, what's crazy is schools have school resource officers, police officers at school. They're being processed. Again, this is that authoritative state, that modern indoctrination to where government is God. You see, but what's even more crazy, and this is something I want you guys to think about, and then we'll kind of pivot this into our next topic where it kind of transitions to the technocracy and transhumanism. But the designer babies are on the horizon as the Ethics Council have given green lights to genetically edited embryos. Now, this is obviously something that we paid attention to for years. The reason I put it up, and it's from the telegraph.co.uk by Sarah Napton, is because you have mainstream media now talking about designer babies, genetically edited embryos. This is the future. They're literally trying to, with modern education, you know, get kids addicted to drugs, have these opioid addictions, scramble their brains with what they think as education rather than learning higher sciences and actual philosophies and actual practicalities and all kinds of different trades and schools, literally, you know, trying to embody the Renaissance. No, you know, you need to learn gender fluidity. While they're literally scrambling the brains of the coming generations, they're literally on the side setting up a reality and a world to where people who don't have families, who don't have a history or a genealogy, but can really receive the best through this kind of technocratic science, can succeed and will succeed. You see, I'm only going to get into a little bit of this, and then we have to pivot into a little clip I got together for you guys where we have multiple people talking about universal basic income. But this article from the Telegraph, it says that designer babies are on the horizon after an influential group of scientists concluded that it could be morally permissible to genetically engineer human embryos. In a new report, which opens the door to a change in the law, the Nuffield Council on Bioethics said that the DNA editing could become an option for parents wanting to, quote, influence the genetic characteristics of their child. Although it would largely be used to cure devastating genetic illnesses or predispositions to cancer and dementia, the experts said that they were not ruling out cosmetic uses such as making tweaks to increase height or changing eye or hair color if it would make a child more successful. In the past, the council has given the green light to controversial procedures such as three-parent babies, in which the DNA of a second mother is used to replace the faulty code in a cell's batteries. Following a widespread consultation vote in Parliament, the law was changed to allow the procedure, and the first babies with the DNA of three people are expected to be born later this year, or at least in early 2019. Currently, scientists are only allowed to genetically edit human embryos for 14 days for research purposes, after which they must be destroyed, and it is illegal to implant them into the womb. But the Nuffield Council said it could become legal if the safeguards were met. Professor Karen Young, chair of the Working Party on the Genome Editing and Human Procedure, or Human Reproduction, quote, "There is potential for heritable genome editing interventions to be used at some point in the future in assisted human reproduction as a means for people to secure certain characteristics in their children. Initially, this might involve preventing the inheritance of a specific genetic disorder. However, if the technology develops, it has the potential to become an alternative strategy available to parents for achieving a wider range of goals." Basically, we're talking about transhumanism. We're talking about the world of Gattaca, the movie Gattaca becoming a reality. We're talking about biohacking. All of these things, this designer baby, this reality that you see them trying to create, it plays into the future, the Space Force, and so much more. We're going to get into some stuff later on where we have DARPA with their mind-controlled super soldiers with cybernetic interfaces. Think about this. Think about what I'm just trying to explain to you here. They have them with modern education. They are literally telling us that we need to learn more about gender fluidity. What's happening to us? They're trying to dissolve the genders and make us one. And then at the same time, they're trying to edit out any genetic disorders. What would this look like if we were living in the midst of it? What would it look like if you had no choice but to change? Now, I have a lot of different theories on this, but the easiest way to say it is that we are changing on levels that they can't comprehend. And so they, those in control, the ruling class, would like to keep us in control underneath their thumb. So we don't have the time to actually understand in what ways we are evolving and how we can benefit one another. One of the ways they would like to do this to keep us in this form of techno serfdom is to give us literal money. What do I mean by this? Let's take a listen of this little compilation I put together for you guys. I'm going to kind of accelerate it whenever we hit points to where, you know, the statement's been made. But let's take a listen.
The economy is doing well here in the United States. Tax cuts, deregulation, a stock market that's been booming, although it's been a little iffy the last couple of weeks. Are you concerned about income inequality?
I think with the coming on of AI and other things, that there is certainly a danger of income inequality.
Why? Artificial intelligence, why? Because it...
Well, just the amount of jobs it's going to take away and so on.
And that's coming. You think that's going to happen?
There's no question it will. So we've got to come up with ways of, you know, creating new jobs. But I think a basic minimum earnings for everybody, so that there's nobody that is having to sleep on the street.
So guaranteed basic income or universal basic income.
100% think that's really important.
Well, there are people in this country who call that a nanny state, you know.
Some people will call it that, but I think that it will come about one day, and I think...
Out of necessity,
and I think that, you know, cities should experiment. You know, you should have... the more we can experiment with things, the better. I mean, like, you know, with drug reform, the fact that cities just experimented by, you know, some legalizing marijuana, some doing medical marijuana, and now we can look back and see... There wasn't an explosion of people taking marijuana. You know, there's been benefits from, you know, from all the tax and so on. So if people could do the same with basic income and just experiment with some cities and see what happens.
The biggest challenge to workers in countries like mine today is technology. And the biggest challenge for your new president, when we think about how we're going to employ more people here, is going to be also technology, because artificial intelligence is here and it is accelerating. And you're going to have driverless cars, and you're going to have more and more automated services. And that's going to make the job of giving everybody work that is meaningful tougher. And we're going to have to be more imaginative. And the pace of change is going to require us to do more fundamental reimagining of our social and political arrangements to protect the economic security and the dignity that comes with a job. It's not just money that a job provides. It provides dignity and structure and a sense of place and a sense of purpose. And so we're going to have to consider new ways of thinking about these problems, like a universal income, review of our work week, how we retrain our young people, how we make everybody an entrepreneur at some level. But we're going to have to worry about economics if we want to get democracy back on track.
I know. I truly know what it means to have a place to stay and then to go from being comfortable to having a car to losing it because you can't pay your rent.
Shay Holloman lives in Stockton, California, a city east of San Francisco, plagued by a lack of jobs and low wages. But the mayor of Stockton has a radical plan to combat poverty. Give its poorest residents $500 a month and see what they do with it. Michael Tubbs is spearheading the first-of-its-kind project in the U.S., which is part of an 18-month experiment funded by the Economic Security Project.
So we talk often like economic insecurity or people working harder and harder only to fall further and further behind. I felt almost a moral responsibility to do something.
The issue of poverty is personal for Tubbs. Growing up in Stockton, where one in four residents live in poverty, his family relied on government assistance to get by.
My mom was on welfare for the first 5-6 years of my life, and you get food stamps, but that's not cash. And maybe food's not the biggest need, because you could go over a family member's house to eat.
The Economic Security Project, co-led by Facebook co-founder Chris Hughes, is giving $1 million to fund the Stockton experiment, which will start up in 2019. The idea of governments providing a universal basic income has been gaining global traction. The Finnish government is running a 2-year trial on a program that gives 2,000 unemployed people $660 a month.
There will be fewer and fewer jobs that a robot cannot do better. Okay. What to do about mass unemployment? This is going to be a massive social challenge. And I think ultimately we will have to have some kind of universal basic income. I don't think we're going to have a choice.
Universal basic income.
Universal basic income. I think it's going to be necessary.
So it means that unemployed people will be paid across the globe.
Yeah.
Because there is no job, a machine, robot is taking over.
That's simply I don't want to be clear that these are not things that I think that I wish would happen. These are simply things that I think probably will happen. And since if my assessment is correct and they probably will happen, then we need to say, what are we going to do about it? And I think some kind of a universal basic income is going to be necessary. Now, the output of goods and services will be extremely high. So with automation, there will come abundance. There will be almost everything will get very cheap.
Definitely something to think about. And what you guys basically heard there was Elon Musk talking about universal basic income. Barack Obama talking about universal basic income. Richard Branson talking about universal basic income and how in Stockton, California, they're the very first city in America to roll out universal basic income and how the Finnish are already doing it. This is something that we see happening, this idea of just giving people free money. It's not what you think it is. If you want the deeper truth of it, it's not really what you think it is. They've given up. Those in control are tired of making jobs for people. They're saying, you know what, you figure it out. This is mass unemployment. You know, with the robots coming, they're going to take over everything. They're going to take over the jobs And this is why Elon Musk said that there's going to be abundance with goods and services, because that's where we're going to have to be. Every single person is going to have to be their own entrepreneur, their own brand, their own person, or we have to fall off. But at the same time, they're trying to offer you a handout, pick me up. All you have to do is abide by their rules. Imagine being able to be paid by YouTube, but because of all the censorship stuff, you're getting a cut back in it. You can't put out as much content. You can't do what you want because you have to play in their field. That's what's happening. Another example of this, and I'm going to play for you a clip, is how we have Amazon. Their workers recently went on strike. We literally have their people coming out saying how they have contemplated suicide. Is this the mega corporation? Is this capitalism? Is this the world that we want to live in? No, it's not. And that's why the machines will take over. But I'm going to play for you guys this quick clip where we have an Amazon worker that has gone on strike talking about how he's contemplated suicide.
There was a point in my life where, when I was working there, towards the end of the time I was there, I was so depressed, and I kept telling myself, if this is the best my life is going to get, why am I even still here? And I would leave in such a horrible emotional state that I'd have to leave because I couldn't physically be there anymore. And I finally, the second time that I had broke down crying and left work because of it, I called one of my best friends, and she told me, if working there really makes you feel like this, if you feel like taking your own life because of the job you're working at, don't work there. That is not, there's no work environment that should make you feel like that. And so I left, and I, thank you.
Yeah, but that's, unfortunately, that's how they see us.
This is a company owned by a person whose wealth increases $275 million every single day.
And that was Bernie Sanders with his CEOs versus workers. What we're talking about is how these people, they don't see us as individuals. They just see us as cogs. They see us as just numbers. Like Sharon Parker, one of the founders of Facebook, said, if you are a conscientious objector, we'll get you eventually. They know that over time, you will break down. That's their whole point. That's their whole plan, is to slowly indoctrinate you to where you only think of the state, to where you only think of what is current. I heard something basically where they're talking about what we consider today, and I hate getting into politics because I'm neither left nor right. I don't like to look at either of this type of stuff. If anything, I try to be, I don't want to say anarchist or libertarian, but leave me to my own devices. I'll take care of myself. I heard what we're seeing today is liberalism, this modern form of liberalism, is destroying itself. You can't keep up with it. It's not a real belief because it's changing every single day. And that's why what we're using with technology, or what is being used as technology, is to where it's conditioning you to just accept what is new. What's the latest trend? What's the latest word? What's the latest thing to be offended by? What is the latest thing? If you don't stand for something during every single one of these waves, you're not going to understand how they're slowly conditioning you. They're chipping away every single second, trying to get your brain. They understand what they're doing. Which leads me to my next point. Apparently, and we've talked about this before as well, apparently YouTube will now decide for you what is and what isn't authoritative news. You've probably seen this on your guys' updates whenever you do look at YouTube on your phone, but now they actually have a Wikipedia or some kind of information that shows you what the platform is. Like if you're watching it from, say, CNN, ABC, or any one of these places, a little Wikipedia page will pop up and show you, yep, hey, this is legit. But let me get into this. This is from Activist Post. I put this up July 13th. It says, YouTube is dominating the global news cycle by providing and pushing what it determines is authoritative news. The Google News Initiative will invest up to $100 million per year for the next 3 years to lifting up, quote, quality journalism. Internally, they're developing a working group of newsrooms to crank out their own news stories. Now, before I continue, remember a few weeks back how I talked about Facebook and CNN teaming up to bring you like a journalism news project? You know, you have California coming up with a fake news advisory group. Now you have Google and YouTube literally pumping $3 million over a three-year period. How much is that? How much did they say? It was $100 million per year for the next 3 years. So over $300 million. Ha! To give you quality news. They can't beat what the common person wants to hear, so they have to come out with what they're calling authoritative news. Not fake news, authoritative news. What's the governing story? You see, this is, again, more of Big Brother. Don't think for yourself. Listen to what we're telling you. They realize that mainstream media is dying. CNBC, NBC, BBC, ABC, CNN, Fox, all these places, right? All these different news outlets. Cable TV is dying. They realize their next audience is us. It's podcasting. Is social media. Is this new media? People who are searching for new different platforms to try to communicate. So now they have to try to dominate these platforms where everybody is. Before we get off, let me get back into this article. It says, following a year in which YouTube has reportedly promoted conspiracy theory videos during breaking news events like the shootings in Parkland, Florida, and Las Vegas, on Monday, the company announced that a slew of new features it hopes will make news on the platform more reliable and less susceptible to manipulation. The company is also investing $25 million in grants to news organizations looking to expand their video operations as part of a larger $300 million program sponsored by YouTube's sister company, Google. According to the YouTube executives, the goal is to identify the authoritative news sources, bring those videos to the top of users' feeds, and support quality journalism with tools and funding that would help news organizations more effectively reach their audiences. The challenge is deciding what constitutes authority when the public seems more divided than ever on which news sources to trust, or whether to trust the traditional news industry at all. Among the many changes YouTube announced Monday are substantial tweaks to the tools it uses to recommend news-related videos. In the coming weeks, YouTube will start to display an information panel above videos about developing stories, which will include a link to an article that Google News deems to be the most relevant and authoritative on the subject. The move is meant to help prevent hostility recorded hoax videos from rising to the tops of YouTube's recommendations. And yet, Google News hardly had a spotless record when it comes to promoting authoritative content. Following the 2016 election, the tool surfaced a WordPress blog falsely claiming that Donald Trump won the popular vote as one of the top results from the term, quote, final election results. And again, what this is obey Big Brother. Don't go out and go do the due diligence for yourself. Obey us. Obey the state. Obey what we're telling you. You shouldn't have your own opinion. No. Trust us. We're pumping all this money in. Trust us. We have your best interest at heart. They don't have your best interest at heart. We have to understand the levels at which these people are operating is total manipulation, deception. There is no discernment. All they want is for you to obey. Don't question. If you haven't caught on, they don't want you to ever question. And this kind of ties into what we'll be getting into here shortly with No Religion in China, how we're, again, worshiping the state. There's been a mass exodus from church. The percentage of young adults with no religious affiliation has nearly quadrupled since 1986. Now, I want people to go out and go read this for themselves. But basically what we're talking about is how they have, you know, removed religion from school and how we are. And this ties into, again, more of that modern indoctrination to where you don't have the separation of church and state was important. Now, what is happening to the modern day state or to the modern day church? It's crazy. It is literally crazy. With the pedophiles, the priests, the archbishops, you know, Cardinal George Pell, Pope Francis and everything else that's going there, I think it's very important that we're very that we're aware of how corrupt the church is, almost as corrupt as the government. But that's the whole point. It's to collapse collapse church, to collapse government, to where we're all part of this sociological ideology. I don't even know what you would call it. And I wanted to talk about this before, whenever we were going over universal basic income. One of the goals of Agenda 2030 is just that, to end poverty in its forms everywhere. And if you noticed, they're planning this in 2019. They're planning this to end for Finns in 2021. This stuff is very real. Where we see ourselves moving, this Agenda 2030, Agenda 21 that I'm always going on and on about, it's very real. And a lot of it is foretold, even in the Bible. And unfortunately, we don't necessarily go over the Bible and its contents, prophecy, revelations, and things like that as much as we should, as much as we have in the past, because it really does correlate to what we see happening now. This is the establishment of the one world government, the one world religion. This is why you have people who no longer want nationalism, who no longer want, you know, patriotism, who no longer want individuality. It's all about the collective. This is a long time coming. It really is. And this is also happening in China, you know, where they're literally destroying churches, just leveling churches. If even if you have a Bible, they're just like, report that guy, we're going to behead him. You better not worship anything other than the state. What are you doing? This is the corporatocracy. This is, again, if you ask me, more of that systemic serfdom, to where they get us used to these types of things. You know, I think one of the better quotes I've ever heard when it comes to spirituality is that it's the highest form of revolution. No one can take your relationship with God from you. No one can take your relationship with your deeper inner self from you. That's why, you know, people of faith, that's why they try to take them out first, because they have that harder resolve than most people do. They are willing to compromise, or they're not willing to compromise. They're not willing to give up their faith like many other people are. That's why it's important to really highlight this. Your faith can be tested. Your faith is optional. All faith requires is that you believe and that you are tested and that it is given to you. The government, no. All it requires is your obedience. It wants you to submit. Bend the knee. Your spirituality, your faith, it wants to uplift you. Understand that you are greater. And this is why they have to destroy your spirituality. This is why they have to destroy any kind of spirituality. You see, because if you can get inside and understand that there's more to you and more to this, this fear-based system won't affect you. That's, you know, another reason why we had to talk about alchemy, the magnum opus, the great work, the more to us that they are literally trying to suppress, trying to hijack, which leads me to my next point. DARPA is researching mind-controlled troops connected to weapon systems. Again, we see this evolutionary period, this transitional period that humans can go through, that's being obstructed. Something's being put in its way. It's being controlled somehow. This article was put up July 18th. It's by Nicholas West of Activist Post. It says, by now, it's not exactly news that the U.S. military would love nothing more than to create mind-controlled soldiers. Since the inception of Activist Post, we've been reporting about technologies such as transcranial magnetic stimulation that could be added to soldiers' helmets as a way of altering their brain activity. And if people are curious as to what that was, transcranial stimulation, little brain zaps, relieve yourself of pain, maybe even end violent tendencies. We talked about this in a previous episode. Continuing on, it says DARPA, at the behest of the Pentagon, has been at the forefront of nearly all military mind control programs and continues to invest tens of millions of taxpayer funds into moving this technology forward. They have looked at various methods via remote brainwave stimulation, as well as the more direct microchip implant neural engineering system design, in their parlance, in order to create the much-touted super soldier of the future. However, DARPA's new round of investment seeks to go beyond what has been even discussed so far. As far as reported by NextGov, the future soldier would mentally link up with the various weapon systems at their disposal. Disturbingly, this would also be a two-way system that could enable the systems to transmit information back to the soldier as well. Today, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency is selecting teams to develop a neural interface that would allow both troops to connect with military systems using their brainwaves and let those systems transmit information directly to the user's brains. The Next Generation Non-Surgical Neurotechnology, or N3 program, aims to combine the speed and processing power of a computer with the human's ability to adapt to complex situations. DARPA said, in other words, the technology would let people control, feel, and interact with a remote machine as though it were part of their own body. As NextGov correctly points out later in the article, this technology has been openly sought since the 1960s, and they have since proven that at least limited brain-computer interfaces are operable. However, this largely has been done in an area of prosthetics for the disabled, or for the aforementioned limited tests with brain wave stimulus through a helmet. But now, they're trying to take it a step further. They want to integrate two computers. They literally want to have it to where we're interacting with things all around us. This is beyond us. This is transhumanism, you see. Who do you think are the main purveyors of these types of things? People who are totally down to shake off what they think of as humans, to forego the human shell. This is, again, evidence of this paradigm shift where we find ourselves. Things are changing. And all it requires is your obedience as well as your silence. If you're not able to identify these types of things, you're not able to really be effective. Marinate on that. Your taxpaying dollars are funding a program to basically interface you with computers. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how now, apparently, Elon Musk has promised to fix the Flint water crisis. Germany has chosen to go renewable, and Ireland is choosing to divest from fossil fuels. And while we're here talking about the mind, I think it's important that we point out an article that has popped up saying how your thoughts affect brain structure. That's right. What you think affects your brain. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about this and more on the other side. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. I'll talk to you soon. That's right. And we're back. I know. Sometimes it kind of seems like a dream. But don't worry. I'm still here. And I'll be right here with you. Ladies and gentlemen. Wow. There's so much stuff going on and we have the pleasure of talking about it. Every single week it seems like things are just changing. I hope you're changing. I actually hope that I'm able to affect your growth. You're affecting mine. The stress that kind of comes with this. Oh man, you wouldn't believe, but let me tell you, it refines me. It excites me. It motivates me. It empowers me. You motivate me to be a better version. Thank you for tuning in to this edition. So before we went to break, I told you we were going to talk about something that's very, very important. Right? Something that's kind of crucial to everybody's growth. We're talking about how thoughts can change the physical structure of your brain. This is an article put up July 18th. It's by Sign of the Times. It says, the way people think and act not only affects the way the brain operates, but also its shapes according, but also its shape, according to researchers at the University of Zurich. They found that each brain has a physical properties as unique as fingerprints that can alter over time. Studies have shown that thoughts alone can improve vision, fitness, and strength. The placebo effect, as observed with fake operations and sham drugs, for example, because of the power of thought. Expectancies and learned associations have been shown to change brain chemistry and circuitry, which results in real physiological and cognitive outcomes, such as less fatigue, lower immune system reaction, elevated hormone levels, and reduced anxiety. Reasoning, spatial skills, and the speed of thought begin to decline around ages of 20 and 30s, and as you age, your brain goes through changes that can slow down your thinking. It loses volume. The cortex becomes thinner. The myelin sheath surrounding the fibers of your neurons begin to degrade, and your brain receptors don't fire as quickly. Some brain areas, including the hippocampus, shrink in size depending on the thought patterns. The myelin sheath that surrounds and protects the nerve fibers wears down, which can slow down the speed of communication between neurons. Some of the receptors on the surface of neurons that enable them to communicate with one another may not function as well as they once did. These changes can affect your ability to encode new information into your memory and retrieve information that's already in storage. Professional musicians, golfers, and chess players, for example, have particular characteristics in the regions of the brain which they use the most for their skilled activity, stated a press release. Every thought you have causes neurochemical changes, some temporary and some lasting. For instance, when people consciously practice gratitude, they get a surge of rewarding neurotransmitters like dopamine and experience a general alerting and brightening of the mind. Probably correlated with more of the neurochemical norepinephrine, another neurochemical. What they're trying to say is that your thoughts affect how your brain works. If you want good, you'll see good. You'll make good. Winners focus on winning. Losers focus on winners. That's why winners always win. Losers keep on losing. You got to learn that what we're up against, even though it might seem insurmountable, there are still solutions. We are the solutions. That's the actual beauty of it all. We actually are the solutions. We just have to come together and realize it. Now, this next article, this next talking point I have for you guys is something I want you to marinate on, something to think about. We have so many different things at our disposal, but we are just actively distracted, giving our money to different people for no reason. But as the government has failed its citizens, Elon Musk has promised to fix the lead contamination in Flint homes. 4 years after Flint, the Flint water crisis, you know, 4 years later, after people have literally, you know, who are developing these neurodegenerative diseases. Children are being born with lead in their brain. There are skin lesions from people just, you know, drinking this. Legionnaire's disease. 4 years after Flint, Michigan made headlines for poisoning residents with contaminated water, Elon Musk is promising to help find a solution. That's fantastic. And this is a legit thing. You know, you can see it on his Twitter. You know, somebody asked him. He said, I heard a bunch of people saying there's no way you could help get clean water to Flint, Michigan. They said that you wouldn't be capable. He said, on July 11th, please consider this a commitment that I will fund fixing the water in any house in Flint that has contamination above FDA levels. No kidding. And then somebody else picked this up and said, hey, Flint friends, this is Jonathan D. Yenner. He says, hey, Flint friends, let's make this happen. If you're a resident dealing with contaminated water and still paying some of the highest water bills in the country for years, now's your chance. Elon Musk could set you up with a site or a database. Or Elon Musk, could you set up a site or a database where people can sign up for this? He says, for now, reply to my tweet. And with the PPM and PPB tests, and someone will install a water filter, creating email flint@x.com. But I'm in China, so that won't be working until tomorrow. And so basically what he's talking about is how, you know, he's going to do this. Whether or not it happens, we'll see. Where have we seen Elon Musk stick his hands in to these types of endeavors before? Puerto Rico, where he's installed his power walls. Now, is this making the country better, or is this making Elon Musk more rich? These people that make these money. You see, one of the thought processes I have behind this is, again, going down the thought process of the corporatocracy, the technocracy, to where government has collapsed. They failed us. But we don't worry. We have people like Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and all of these other people to come through and be our saviors. They will provide the solutions. This is why you have dominoes fixing holes, right? This is why Elon Musk is coming up with battery systems, solar panels for walls. All of the things that we're beginning to see here in the future, we have to understand that what it is it shapes the foundation for the world that they're trying to create. Now, this is a fantastic thing. I think it's awesome that we have Elon Musk claiming to want to fight and fix the lead contamination that's taking place in Flint. But one thing I want people to kind of think about, and this isn't a dash on Elon Musk, is what happens whenever you have very little wealth, not a lot of money, basically in the hands of a few people. You know, like I said, Jeff Bezos became the richest person in the world, but look what happened. You know, his employees are literally contemplating suicide. And I don't mean that's a nervous chuckle. The reason I say this is because these people they don't care about us so much as the publicity that they can gain. They care about how this makes their stock looks. You see, it's not about, you know, really trying to benefit society. It's, you know, where can I make the next investment of my money and get a good return. You see. And I know some of this stuff kind of seems cold-hearted, but what happens if Elon's company crashes? You know, are they going to be there? Are they going to take that back? Is that collateral? Who knows? Or do people not think about this? We cry out for so many solutions, but you know, are we really looking at what we're asking for? This also plays into, you know, how we're again calling for our own police state. But I digress. You know, let me get back to point. Like I said, we are talking about some of this renewable Germany, Agenda 2030, Agenda 21, how we see the world making this shift, changing their perspective on how they would like to impact the world. I put this up July 18th or July 11th. It's from Inverse. It's by Matthew Palin. It says Germany wants to get 65% renewable energy by 2030. Here's the wild plan. German solar and wind farms are producing more electricity than coal now, 118 billion kilowatt hours through this past June, according to BDEW, the German Association for Energy and Water Industries. Clean energy is the largest part of the EU leaders' total power mix, but it's frankly only one among the many drastic ways by which these models of Teutonic efficiency say they are hoping to meet their highly ambitious 2030 sustainable energy goals. Fingers crossed. So how are they going to do it? A detailed plan produced by the German clean energy think tank, Agora Energiewende, recently published in American English, lays out everything from targeted wind farm locations to temperature-controlled power grids to an electric rail overhaul. For its part, the German government has appointed a 28-person commission to produce a plan to phase out 50% of the country's coal-fired power plants by 2030. There's already question about whether the goals are achievable. Germany's economy and energy ministry says that it will have to shutter at least that many to meet its stated 2030 carbon reduction goals, according to Bloomberg. Their ultimate plan is to almost double their usage of renewable energies like wind and solar by 2030, bringing it up to 65% to their total energy portfolio. So what we're talking about, you know, while I'm reading this, you know, one of the thoughts I have is, you know, you have so many different organizations, so many different countries that are kind of coming together to achieve this 2030 goal. What happens if they don't achieve this 2030 goal? You know, I'm just kind of curious what really happens if they're unable to get there. You see, you know, far be it from me to kind of ask that question, but I think it's kind of something to think about if we're not really. I don't know. You know, maybe that's me just being kind of kooky as always. I'm just wondering what it means. But what I'm trying to point out by that, looking at how you have Germany trying to go renewable, you have people that are caring about the environment now. You see these types of things happening. It's our focus, as we saw with the approach towards universal basic income, a fundamental change. What they're basically talking about is the socioeconomic reformation, how we have to readjust our focus. What are we really doing? You see, where are we going with all of this chaos? You see, one of the things I wanted to point out is, you know, caring about the environment, what we're doing, and how we're trying to take steps. There are hundreds of cancer lawsuits that are finally getting the green light against Monsanto. I think that's great because basically what we're talking about, and then there's also articles coming out about how they bullied scientists and hid cancer research results. There's stuff coming out about how dangerous Roundup is. All of this is great. What we're basically beginning to talk about is how they're collapsing Monsanto into Bayer. I think that's basically what's going to happen. Collapsing Monsanto into Bayer, and then you're going to have Bayer take over the agricultural and the pharmaceutical industry. There's so many different things that come with that, but this is good. We have one company kind of, you know, basically dissolving and being absorbed into another. This gives us a central point to attack, which is good, which is awesome, you know, which is great. But now we have to really understand the levels at which we're going to be working. And what I mean by this is whenever you have places like whenever you have Bayer and Monsanto basically teaming up to bring you agriculture, to bring you pharmaceuticals, to bring you all of this different type of stuff, what we're beginning to talk about is how the threat becomes that much more serious. And basically what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is they're going to start giving people marijuana in place of opioids. The opioid epidemic is lethal. I think everybody can see that. The opioid epidemic, what it's doing to people, what it's doing to families, it's atrocious. I for one, have never been ever about pharmaceuticals, pills, any of that type of stuff. I'm staunchly against it. I really try to stay. I don't advocate it. People that get on medicine, I understand if that's what you need, you know, that's what you need. But understand that it is a systemic process to get you addicted. And I'm not about that. I'm really not about that. But what's happening now is this switch, this subtle change. They're seeing that cannabis, CBD, marijuana, and all this stuff is actually beneficial to people. They see that that people are actually, that there's curative properties to it. And now that you have these people getting into it, Bayer, they're getting into it. Monsanto's getting into it. Microsoft is getting into it. All these different people are getting into it. They just don't talk about it as much because they don't want to draw a whole lot of attention. But what this is also going to do, this subtle shift that's going to take place, is they're going to slowly start offering pot instead of opioids to people, just to kind of get that idea out there. Now, let's read this article from the Free Thought Project where they talk about this. This is from Jay Sinopoulos. He says, precedent set as court orders government to pay for medical pot instead of opioids for co-workers comp or for workers comp. Again, I'm not saying I don't, you know, agree with medical pot or any of this type of stuff. You just really have to look at where it's coming from. If we understand how lethal pharmaceuticals are, it's only a matter of time until they start lacing this medical pot with the very same chemicals that you heard me mention before, from bisphenol A to Roundup to everything. But let me get into this. I put this up July 12th. It says, in a major victory for medicinal cannabis rights, New Jersey workers' compensation judge has ordered a freehold township to pay for an injured worker's medical marijuana despite an insurance carrier's objection stemming from the drug's status, Schedule 1 status, as a controlled substance under federal law. People will no longer be forced to rely solely on opioids for the new treatment of pain. New Jersey workers' compensation judge Lionel Simon invoked the necessity of not forcing injured workers onto opioids that are, quote, killing people, as he ordered Freehold Township to pay for a municipal employee's medical marijuana. Quote, quite frankly, this court is very aware of the explosion of these narcotics on the streets in the United States. In the last decade, the tremendous amount of deaths and addiction that are associated with these opioids, if there's anything criminal here, it's how these drugs have been force-fed to injured people, creating addicts. The New Jersey Law Journal reported an attorney for a carrier, quote, PMA group, argued that the New Jersey's medical marijuana law is preempted by federal law designating it as illegal, and also cited a recent ruling from the Maine Supreme Court holding that an insurance carrier cannot be ordered to pay for marijuana when it is prohibited under federal law. Judge Simon said that while both state and federal drug laws were intended to stop the use and distribution of illicit drugs and drug-related crime, he couldn't understand how covering McNary's medical marijuana could make the insurance company complicit in distributing illegal narcotics. Quote, I don't think the New Jersey Medical Marijuana Act is in conflict with that. Certainly, I don't understand how a carrier who will never process, never distribute, never intended to distribute these products, who will merely sign a check into an attorney's trust account, is in any way complicit with the distribution of illegal narcotics. So basically, he's saying, I don't see how you're going to contribute to this. You're going to do this. You're going to pay for this. You're going to pay for this person using medical marijuana. Because it seems like, and hear me out, you know, I could be wrong, seems like even though there's some kind of prescription for these pills that people get, they somehow end up on the street. People somehow still end up with prescription pills and all this stuff. If they're literally written out as a prescription, how are people getting it? So, you know, call me crazy, but that's just stuff I think people should think about. That's awesome. We're having the introduction of medical marijuana into people's lives instead of opiates. You know, you can turn on a commercial for AstraZeneca and you'll hear how many different side effects that come with literally just taking one or trying to have one curative. You know, pharmacy, pharmakeia, you know, practicing any of that type of stuff, taking these types of poisons. Venomous poison. That's the best way I can describe it. You know, what is it going to do for you? How is it really a benefit? People don't think about these types of things. We really don't see how what we think of as a benefit really isn't. You know, Johnson & Johnson was recently forced to pay $4.7 billion because they knew that their baby powder gave cancer. And that's not a pharmaceutical, but that's just one example. You know, a lot of people don't want to look at it because it's kind of wild to think about, right? And this is another thing to think about. You know, while we're sitting here making these great strides and really trying to think about what is happening, how we're able to do more, how we actually are becoming conscious of what is happening around us. You know, what happens whenever it's forced? What happens whenever it's actually, again, a faux compassion, a forced understanding, a indoctrination? You know, understanding that you need to change is different than being forced to change. And I feel like that's exactly what's happening. But recently, California is going to try to fine citizens who are using over 55 gallons of water, as Nestle is pumping billions of gallons for free. Let's take a listen.
Controversial new water restrictions could change the way Californians think about water use. Today, Governor Jerry Brown signed two new laws that establish tough water use rules, and those who don't comply could face fines. Good evening. Thanks for joining us. I'm Christina James.
And I'm Curtis Meng. CBS 13's Jennifer Bergara is live at the state capitol getting answers on what changes you may have to make to cut back. Jen?
Yeah, Curtis and Christina, the drought officially ended in California of April of last year, but lawmakers say they want to prepare for the next one. And if we don't, the state could be in a severe water crisis. There will soon be more focus on flushes and scrutiny over showers. California is now the first state in the nation to enact tough new water efficiency standards. The controversial rules limit how many gallons a person can use inside their home per day.
So that everyone in California is at least integrating efficiency into our preparations for climate change.
So, controversial new water restrictions.
There you have it. Integrating efficiency for climate change. There's a higher purpose. It's not you. There's a higher purpose. It's not what you see. There's a higher purpose. It's called government. It's telling you you're not allowed to do these certain types of things. You know, again, this is just something I think people really need to understand. It's more of that authoritative state. You know, we are a renewable society. We are able to change. We really are. We have to look at it as such, but we also have to understand the times that we're in. You know, I talked about, and I put this up recently, lab-grown meat. This is something I think is kind of crazy. I really don't even know what to say about it. But lab-grown clean meat is going to enter the food market by 2018. You have Richard Branson working on this. You have Bill Gates working on this. Clean meat. I don't know where this, it's not plants. You know, who knows? But they're just throwing it out there right now. And you have people in the background working on it. You know, there's so many different things that are going on in society and what's having to happen to a lot of different people in so many different ways is our morals are being challenged. Our ideas are being challenged. Even your consent is being manufactured. A lot of the things that we see happening right now, they don't make sense because it's not for us. It's for the coming generations. You know, the other day I was watching that movie Brothers because some of it was filmed in a town that I grew up in, right? You know, and they're in Afghanistan. One of them gets captured, and you know, you got to think, what right did we have? We're going to look back. I said this when I watched it happen. I said, we're going to look back at this time period and ask, good Lord, what right did we have to go over here to these people and just screw stuff up? And the reason I'm saying that now is we're going to look back and think about how screwed up things are because of the mindset that we have now. You can go back and you can hear me talk about how much I love steak, how much I love potatoes, you know, how much I love burgers, how much I love really good quality food. Don't get me wrong. What is happening to food now is atrocious. You know, you're growing stuff up in cages and killing it in a cage right around the corner. It's crazy. This lab grown meat, this could be an effective alternative. You know, we're not taking a life with that, but this is a quick clip, and if anything, I'll try to read you some of these subtitles. Lab-grown meat. It will solve environmental problems and reduce our dependency on animals for meat. That's the theory, that one of these pieces of meat, one skin cell, could infinitely grow as much as they need. You know, and this is, again, cloning. We're talking about biohacking. We're talking about the idea of creating a renewable society, a renewable state. But after a while, this stuff breaks down. This stuff doesn't become controllable. It doesn't become sustainable. You know, unless there's some kind of innovation, what we're going to be having is stuff that's broken down time after time after time after time with no real actual reintroduction to it. And if you want a more esoteric example of this, or a more occult example of this, right, we're very well aware of the queen and her bloodline, right? This is why they sometimes marry within their family. Well, you can only intermarry for so long until your bloodline breaks down. This is why they have the new, I forget who Prince Harry's marrying. I think it's Meghan Markle. But and then you also have Princess Diane. Basically, what I'm talking about is how they have different bloodlines, different types of genealogies that inject themselves into a bloodline to create something new. If we continue down this path of having nothing but lab-grown meat, we're not necessarily going to even eat meat. We're going to eat cells and other things that are broken down at a certain point. But all of this that we see taking place, from Ireland divesting from fossil fuels to Germany wanting to go 65% renewable with energy, and even these lawsuits being filed against Monsanto, what we're trying to see is how the renewable society is taking place. Even Elon Musk trying to fix the Flint water crisis. All of this stuff is important because we see the social conscious change. And as I've talked about it before, the socioeconomic reformation of us trying to do better, of seeing our effects upon society and trying to make effective changes, conscious changes. But that's why, again, you're hearing me talk more and more about voting with your dollars, voting with your lifestyle, vote consciously, make these decisions. We have to realize that the point and the times that we are in, we're capable of so much. It is a modern day renaissance, and all we have to do is literally gear our mind towards success, and we'll see it. We really, really, really will. We can't fall into this ideology of where we can't think for ourselves, where we have to let other people take care of us. Right now, and we see this happening right now, the future is being made, and you are a part of it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to this edition of Factions of Freedom. This is Modern Indoctrination, the Authoritative State, and Renewable Society.
Expose lies and share truth. This is Noise Era, Freedom Faction.